Welcome to Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast, teaching Davids how to defeat Goliaths. Now here's your host, Mark Anthony Peterson.
Welcome back to the podcast for entrepreneurs, startups, and business mavericks. If you're not a maverick, you don't have to go home, but you got to get up out of this podcast. In this podcast, we teach entrepreneurs how to defeat the corporate giant. Just like in the story of David and Goliath, David defeated a much taller and stronger Goliath, not by fighting the giant in hand-to-hand combat, but by using technology. A slingshot. The slingshot allowed the smaller David to attack from a distance that minimized the advantages that Goliath had over the smaller David. My name is Mark Anthony Peterson. I am a serial entrepreneur, a futurist, and the managing executive at Serial Consulting, a leading small business strategy and technology consulting firm. I am also the author of the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. This podcast is brought to you by Serial Consulting. An idea can launch a business. A strategy can take it global. Hey guys, I want to remind you that we're on Patreon. Patreon.com/Guerrillapreneur. Please support the show. Your support is going to help us launch a fab lab in the Black Belt in rural Alabama. We're going to help bring technology and excitement and innovation to a community that is typically focused on an agrarian lifestyle. We're going to try to infuse that with technology that will bring jobs and economic development to the region. If you can't support the show financially, you can support the show by sharing the show, by liking the show, by commenting on the show, and spreading the word and getting others to join the tribe. We appreciate anything that you can do. Today's show is a Guerrillapreneur news show. News about the sharing, gig, and circular loop economies that is expected to grow to $335 billion by 2025. What's first in Guerrillapreneur news? Amazon is buying Ring doorbell for about $1 billion. This is an interesting acquisition because I think it's going to open the door to more gig jobs and gig opportunities. When you think about where Amazon is going, they want to be able to gain secure access to your home or to your apartment, and to do that, they need to have confirmation that certified individuals completed the transaction. One way to do that is with biometrics. A fingerprint or facial image, some sort of video confirmation. For those of you who are customers of Amazon, you may have noticed that when a driver that's not UPS or FedEx delivers your package, they will put the package at your front door, whip out their smartphone, and either take a video clip or a picture of the package at your front door before they leave the residence. That's to confirm delivery so that they get paid, and to confirm delivery so that Amazon and the vendors who shipped have proof of delivery. Well, buying Ring doorbell gives them all of that in one integrated solution. And think about some of the other products that Ring has. The spotlight with video and voice integrated into it. The doorbell that also gives you video voice capability, and it has a storage component in the cloud that can be retrieved years after for proof of confirmation of delivery or access to a particular residence. So Amazon buying this makes a lot of sense when you think about the businesses that they want to support that require home delivery. And you think about some of the technology that they already have in place. The Amazon Web Services, which already has a solution called Recognition, which can identify objects, and already has facial integration integrated into it, will bolt on nicely to a Ring doorbell solution that gives Amazon the ability to do in the physical world what they do online, which is to offer merchants the ability to ride their infrastructure and perform services because they are trusted to Amazon and therefore they should be trusted to you. So if you're a small vendor that provides gig services, repairs toilets or sinks, and you are a trusted Amazon vendor, you can walk up to a Ring doorbell, press the button, get visual confirmation that you are the vendor that's supposed to enter that home. When it's confirmed by the Amazon Web Services, the recognition, they could let you in, let you perform the services, and then confirm the time that you left when you leave the residence using that same Ring doorbell and have video of the entire transaction end to end that they can deliver directly to the customer, which Ring does now, and store in their archives in case there's any sort of dispute. Great, great acquisition, opening the door to a lot more than just Amazon delivering. All of their trusted partners could ride on this infrastructure and recreate the way we think about commerce. So what's second in Guerrillapreneur news? Social scores might signal the end of religion as we know it. Social credits, to be more specific, may signal the end of God. How many of you watch the show Black Mirror? The season 3, episode 1, called Nosedive, shows a world where everyone is given immediate feedback on every social transaction. How you speak to the mailman, how you speak to the banker, the teller, the used car salesman, are immediately graded to give you a social score. Based on your social standing or social credit, you're able to perform tasks within society at either a higher or a lower cost. It also determines where you can live. The higher the social credit, the better apartments you can get with better financing rates. The lower your social score, the more you're excluded from society, and the more you are excluded from premium jobs. Unfortunately, that world is closer to reality than we think. In 2014, the Chinese government announced that it was going to develop what it called social credit. The State Council, China's governing cabinet, publicly called for the establishment of a nationwide tracking system to rate the reputation of individuals, businesses, and even government officials. The aim for every Chinese citizen is to be trailed by a file of compiling data from both public and private sources by 2020, with those files being searchable by biometrics including face or fingerprint. The State Council wants this credit system to cover the entire society. And when implemented, it can be used to change behaviors, including how people consume energy and how they interact with each other. They're closer than you think, because a number of the businesses supporting the sharing and gig economy also have ecosystems that are almost omnipresent. Alipay and WeChat have built transactional ecosystems that enable consumers to buy groceries, book doctor's appointments, pay for insurance. Essentially, these giants know everything that you're doing when it comes to booking appointments and paying for those services. When you link that together with what the Chinese government calls the social credit, you basically have the ability to give someone a personal FICO score. And I think that's exactly where they're headed. ZimaPay, which is a credit system that also embodies personal credit, is pushing towards a personal FICO score that they would link to a QR code that would tie people's transactional history to their social profile. So how does this get rid of a religion? Well, think about it. Before you had an all-present internet with ecosystems that knew exactly where you were and where you were buying at all times, we had to have a social construct that did exactly the same thing. What does Santa Claus do? He's watching the naughty and nice and making a list so that only the good kids get presents. God, the all-powerful, all-present being, is making the same list and giving that to St. Peter to determine those who get into heaven and those who don't. Those social constructs help to bind together society so that people put others first and kept communities moving in the right direction. If you replace that with social credits, is there a need for religion? Is there a need for God? Do these systems become the de facto God because on a real-time basis they will be determining who's naughty and who's nice and giving you a FICO score, a personal FICO score, that will be displayed for people who will see you in public every day? The lower your score, the bigger the scarlet letter is on your forehead, and you are avoided by those people you want to hang around with until you change your behavior. Once that behavior is changed, you can resume contact with those who you share a similar personal FICO score with. It's an ingenious way to control the masses by using the necessary transactions, daily transactions, as ways to create a social construct. Will this kill God? I think so. If you allow these systems to give you real-time feedback on what you buy, where you buy it, who you interact with, how you treat those people, eventually this will replace God as the commandments of how we treat each other. The tablets that get passed down from the server that tell you, thou shalt not forget to pay your credit card bill. Thou shalt not hack into your neighbor's emails. Those will become the new Ten Commandments of the digital future, replacing the stone analog tablets that guided us for thousands of years. A social credit system could have the same omnipresent capabilities with the ability to grant you access to cheap merchandise if you behave. Let's think about it. I'd love to hear your thoughts about that. Leave me comments on this episode. Give me your feedback and let me know if you'd sign up for a system. Though this won't go into place until 2020 in China, there are already thousands of people who have started using the system and bragging about their social credit score. Is that something that'll go over here in the United States? Could that catch on and have that be the determiner of whether or not you can get into college, or which college you can get into, or where you can live in the United States? And for those of you who listen to this podcast in China, or Russia, or Spain, or France, or Vietnam, how would this system work in your country? How would it play out in your communities? Could it change social behaviors? Would it eliminate God from your everyday life? I'd love to hear your feedback. Leave it here at Podomatic or on iTunes, or follow me on Twitter at Gorillapreneur and let me know how social credits in your life could either kill God or support the current paradigm. Fourth in Gorillapreneur news. 3's company foreshadows the future housing market? How many of you remember 3's company? That 70s show about two beautiful women, Janet Wood, played by Janet DeWitt, and Chrissy Snow, played by Suzanne Summer, who decide to share their apartment with a chef named Jack Tripper, who is played by John Ritter. They made the offer to John Ritter in order to save money, because Janet, who was a florist, and Chrissy, who was a secretary, didn't make the kind of money necessary to pay for the upscale Santa Monica apartment. They needed a third roommate, and they decided to share it with a man. That doesn't sound too risque today, but in the 70s, apartment complex owners frowned on unmarried couples sharing an apartment, let alone two women, very attractive women, sharing it with a man. But 3's company may have foreshadowed what the future housing market was going to be like. These three shared this apartment and lived platonic lives. Janet, Chrissy, and Jack had their own social relationships, their own financial woes, and though they discussed them, they were each independent of the other. The sitcom lasted from 1977 to 1983. And like I said, it may have foreshadowed the future of America's real estate market. Platonic cohabitation and co-ownership. I told you last year, and I told you again this year, that the gig economy was going to eventually push for co-ownership, platonic co-ownership of homes in order to build equity. Because these gig jobs aren't offering the type of pay that would allow an individual or even a couple to buy the upscale homes that their parents were able to acquire. That these gig workers are going to come together in groups and co-own these facilities and share them amongst themselves. And it has finally happened. The launch of a platform called Cohab in Australia has made it easy now for first-time homeowners to buy property that was out of their reach prior to the launch of this platform. This platform, which is described as the Tinder of the real estate market, allows individuals to find people who match their social or economic backgrounds and platonically buy property together that they would otherwise be locked out of. Cohab is an online marketplace, like I said, that matches people with other people who want to co-own property to either live in, to rent out as investments that would otherwise be unaffordable to purchase on their own. As one user of the platform stated, "These fractional investments allowed me to build up equity that I could hold and watch appreciate and then use to make another equity investment on my own." So Cohab is a perfect stepping stone for gig workers who don't have the down payments or the cash to buy luxury housing to come together and offer that ability to get a fractional investment and fractional equity platonically in these properties that they can then resell and build wealth for themselves that allows them to have more financial freedom. And there are more of these platforms popping up every day. Dama.com, BricksX, and Covesta are three more platforms like Cohab that are promoting the fractional investment in residential properties so that individuals who have been priced out of the market can finally own some equity. I told you 2 years ago this was coming, and now it's here. I guess that's why I call myself a futurist. Keep listening to this podcast, and you're going to hear more of what I think about the world that's coming. And if you're smart, and I like to think my audience is, you'll start placing some financial bets against companies that are going to dominate in these spaces. That's what I've done. The stock market has been a great place to test some of my futurist speculations, and I've been rewarded handsomely with some of those bets. Fifth in Gorillapreneur news, cloud kitchens will kill the marketplace. In the sharing economy, I've often told you there are models that I don't believe make sense. For example, I've mentioned that umbrella sharing, which was a real startup in China, or bed sharing, which again was another startup in China, or even sex doll sharing, are all bad ideas. However, there's another concept that some of you are going to be angry at me for saying I think it's a bad idea, and that is food delivery. Services like Uber Eats and Deliveroo run capital-intensive businesses on very slim margins. And even though Uber Eats and Deliveroo do not own the capital, their model incents the investment in future capital by drivers who need vehicles in order to deliver the food that's ordered from consumers. So Mark, if you're saying this is a bad model because it incents the investment in additional capital, what is a better model? Well, the need for capital is driven by the fact that there are so many kitchens that drivers have to pick up food from that multiplies the effort required to get food to a house from multiple locations where a family may not want to dine at a single restaurant. As that complexity grows, the more you have to have capital, i.e. vehicles, in the market to pick up and drop off. I've seen it many, many times. And some of you, if you watch it closely, if you're in a restaurant, there are more and more people walking up to the cashier or the counter or the pickup desk, and they have their phone pointed out to the person behind the register of all the orders they're there to pick up. That line is getting longer and longer as there are fewer and fewer people sitting in the dining area. So what would I do? What would be a better model? The better model would be to consolidate the kitchens. The cloud kitchens would eliminate infrastructure cost, it would eliminate rent, and it would provide a better shared model to offset delivery cost. What do I mean? What if a single restaurant could produce every type of food ordered by a customer? Yes. It would be the equivalent of the Star Trek replicator. Did any of you see the episode on the X-Files, of season 11, episode 7, the episode labeled RM9SBE93ZXJZ, which when put into basic 64 means followers? The whole restaurant was run by robots, and they were making sushi of all types. That's what I'm advocating for. A box, a kitchen, windowless kitchen, capable of producing everything from Taco Bell to filet mignon. Customers would make orders directly from to the cloud kitchen. Robots would produce whatever the customer ordered, McDonald's, Burger King, Taco Bell, all the way up to your highest end consumer fare. Based on the patented recipes provided by those restaurants, these robot kitchens or cloud kitchens would produce the food and immediately give a credit to the corporation providing the recipes. Of course, in the future, driverless cars would deliver the meals directly to the consumers right out of the cloud kitchens. Now, in the future, you'd have this kitchen built into your home, you'd purchase the recipes and you'd have a Burger King hamburger built right there in your house by this technology. But until we get that far, a cloud kitchen with this capability eliminates the duplication of kitchens and gives a shot in the arm to the delivery business because you don't have to have as much capital in order to get food delivered. So in this world, the patents become the prize. Coca-Cola, with their patented formulas for producing their beverages, would only need a SodaStream type device in the home or in the kitchen to instantly generate fresh Coca-Cola on demand. Likewise, with the Big Mac or the Whopper coming out of the same kitchen. Am I thinking too wildly? I think not. Grubhub has already taken the first evolutionary step by making a significant investment in Yum Brands. You know Yum Brands. These are the owners of KFC and Taco Bell, and Grubhub's hope is that they can influence the orders towards these restaurants so that they can affect the deliveries that they make. Kind of cool, huh? Well, they're not the only ones. Food aggregators are getting into the game of actually creating cloud kitchens. In January of this year, food aggregator Swiggy launched its first cloud kitchen, the Bowl Company. And not to be outdone, this month, Zomato, let's call the whole thing off, they also entered the cloud kitchen market. Zomato's cloud kitchen project is called Zomato Infrastructure Service, and their goal is to help restaurants by starting cloud kitchen pods where the restaurateurs would have zero infrastructure costs. Zomato would create the kitchens, up to four of them in a pod, these mini kitchens, and the restaurateurs would just walk in and rent the kitchen space. Zomato will provide the real estate, the equipment, and all these guys have to do is walk in and start cooking the types of foods that Zomato believes want to be delivered in that area. It's a great model. Zomato is going to collect a percentage of the revenue, and the restaurateur never pays any fixed costs associated with the service. They just pay the fee for the services rendered by Zomato in order to generate leads and advertising, plus a percentage of the revenue. So Zomato is going to go out and do all the market research and say, in this area, these types of foods are demanded by the market. And they'll staff them with restaurateurs who are capable of delivering them, and then they'll drive demand to those restaurants and deliver them to those consumers. That's hot. Zomato would also offer a front where customers can select dishes from different restaurants and have them delivered in the same order. Now, I like that. My family and I do what's called smorgasbord weekends. Smorgasbord is where everybody piles in my truck and we drive through as many fast food drive-through windows as we can in about 15 minutes. Load that all into the car, dump it on the dining room table, and we just jump in. And everything could be in there. I remember one week we hit Taco Bell, KFC, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, Pizza Hut, all in one run, and dumped all of that onto the kitchen table, and we just, whatever you wanted, smorgasbord, you grab it. That's what Zomato is offering to consumers with their cloud kitchen pods in the same order, because more and more consumers realize it's not just Pizza Friday, it's Pizza Friday for your daughter, it's Salad Sunday for your wife, and you got to accommodate all of them when making orders if you're not going to dine in at the restaurant. So Zomato has created a kind of virtual food court with multiple restaurant options that can be accessed online. If this trend moves forward, you're going to see the continued decline of capital investments, as you've seen in the retail space with malls, leak out into the fast food restaurant space. So more and more vacant restaurants are going to be consolidated into these pods that produce food and deliver them to the people's homes, leaving a lot of prime real estate to be redeveloped. I'm going to talk about what's going to happen to that in the next podcast, the next Guerrillapreneur News podcast coming up in 3 episodes. So make sure you watch out for that, because as malls disappear, fast food restaurants disappear, but the food doesn't disappear, what's going to happen to American urban communities? It's going to be an interesting gig opportunity. Just stay tuned for it. Finally, in Guerrillapreneur News, I want to talk to you about the highest paying jobs in the gig economy. In her online article for Entrepreneur.com, Rose Leadham gives us the top paying jobs in the contract or gig economy world. As you know, many outlets like Intuit have been forecasting that in the next 5 years, half of all jobs in the United States will be contract or gig related jobs. Now today, there are 57 million freelancers in the United States that contribute up to $1.4 trillion to the economy every year. Now, while the workforce, the full-time workforce, is seeing growth of about 2.6% each year, the freelancing growth is growing at a staggering 8.1%. So you see that forecast by Intuit is spot on. More companies are focusing in on hiring virtual, gig, or contract workers and replacing full-time jobs. And we've seen it and talked about it on this podcast. Procter & Gamble launched a major initiative where they worked gig workers alongside full-time employees, and the results were stellar. And you're seeing that at more and more Fortune 500 companies. So if you're now stoked about the gig economy because of the personal flexibility it gives you, let's talk about some of the highest paying jobs you can get. What's the highest paying job? Deep learning jobs. Now, deep learning is a subset of machine learning and artificial intelligence that has networks that are capable of learning unsupervised from data that is unstructured or unlabeled. If you have skill sets in that area, you can make $115 an hour. Blockchain jobs. Now, everybody's heard blockchain. And many of you associate that with Bitcoin, which is a digital asset. But blockchain is the underlying technology that makes Bitcoin possible. It is the auditing or accounting component that binds all the transactions together that allows for a distributed model. If you're capable of working or building that type of technology, you can earn $85 an hour. Robotics. For all of those kids who are competing in the robotics contest around the country and building machines that can move boxes from one side of the room to the other, you can earn almost $80 an hour. What if you are good at software, but even better at testing it and trying to break into it and figuring out the security holes in it? Penetration testing. You could earn almost $70 an hour. Now, speaking of blockchain, let's look at those digital assets. If you are capable of working on Bitcoin, $65 an hour. I mentioned earlier in the show about facial recognition and video capture with Amazon and Amazon Web Services. Well, if you can program an Amazon Web Services, you can earn $50 an hour. Virtual reality, also $50 an hour. React.js, which is a JavaScript library that's maintained by Facebook and it's used to build user interfaces, you can earn $40 an hour. Final Cut Pro, which is a 360-degree video editing and motion graphics capability, you can earn $30 an hour. And then finally, Instagram marketing. If you can get more eyeballs on images that are on Instagram, you can earn $30 an hour. I think there's a common theme that you can see running through all of these jobs, of an ability to program, to build digital capabilities and assets, to enhance assets that are also digital, to build infrastructure that can manage currency and transactions. All of these are the building blocks for the gig economy. And if you have skill sets in those today, you can command some of the highest salaries in the gig economy. Guys, thank you for listening to another episode of Guerrillapreneur News. News about the sharing, gig, and circular loop economy that's expected to grow to $335 billion by 2025. Remember to support the show. Go to patreon.com/guerrillapreneur and donate. A dollar per episode, or a dollar per month, or even a one-time donation would be greatly appreciated. It's going to help us put that Fab Lab in the Black Belt Rural South. If you can't donate money, please go to iTunes or Podomatic and subscribe. Like this episode and leave your comments. Please share the love and share the show. And some of you have been doing a terrific job at doing that. All my listeners in France, merci. In Germany, danke. In South Africa, danke. In Taiwan, xin xin. In Ireland, thank you. In Switzerland, merci. And in Russia, spasiba. Thank you guys for sharing the love and sharing the show. I'm watching all these new listeners come on in your countries, and it's because of you. You're sharing Guerrillapreneur and getting more entrepreneurs to join the tribe. Guerrillapreneurs, Scott Sullivan said it best in episode 7. Be a mace, sharpen those spikes, and remember, if you're not breaking something, your company might be the next thing that gets broken.
Thank you for listening to the Guerrillapreneur, the Art of Waging Small Business Warfare podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, you may also enjoy the book Guerrillapreneur, Small Business Strategy for Davids Wanting to Defeat Goliaths, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and iTunes. Follow Mark Peterson on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Guerrillapreneur. Now I want to close with a quote from the great Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu. Victorious warriors win first and then go to war, while defeated warriors go to war first, then seek to win. Keep fighting, Guerrillapreneurs!